You are listening to The Mauer Report, a live radio show that ventures into the mysteries of life, as well as the hot topics of the day, either political or business. I want to welcome everybody to this evening's Mauer Report. Just was telling my guest tonight that I feel like I'm forgetting something, so I'm not sure what it is. So if somebody out there knows what I'm forgetting, some psychic, maybe it's the lottery numbers that I wrote down somewhere and I can't remember where they are. Oh, anyways. my guest tonight is Tom Conwell. Tom, been a while since we've talked, so how have you been? Or how are you tonight, I guess, more importantly?
Okay, well, I'm doing fine. Had, you know, a couple of medical problems along the way. That's what happens when you get old. And other than that, I'm hanging in there and trying to keep up with what I've promised people that I'm going to do. Finished 5 books and
Before we wander off into conversation, let's get the books promoted, because I know I have a, I don't want to say an extensive list of things, but we're going to get lost in the weeds, I'm pretty sure, once we get started here. So 5 books, Tom, I remember 2, I think. So you've been putting pen to paper. Well, I don't even know if that holds true anymore, but go ahead. Tell me about them.
Sure. Well, I started out with writing about UFO sightings on the East Coast. And I got through the sightings on the East Coast and finished the book, and I thought something was missing with it, you know? And I wasn't happy with it. So I started the second book, which was the Central United States, and all of a sudden it hit me what was missing. What was missing was a map. So when I did the Central United States, I filled in the map, a large 30 by 50 map of the United States, with pins of sightings of 3 different types of craft. And as I started filling these in, I was realizing that not only did I miss out on doing this in the first volume, that what was interesting about this is that I started finding all these little sections where there were collections of UFO sightings where there wasn't large collections of people. I found that really, really interesting. And that's what really, really got me going to finish this map. I did the Central United States, and I stopped writing, stopped doing what I was doing. I jumped back and finished the Eastern United States. Then I had 2/3 of a map with all of these little spots in there that did not have any explanations for. In other words, maybe 30 or 40 sightings for I was only looking at about a 5-year window, but 30 or 40 sightings in an area where it was mostly woods or mountains. And that was really unusual, seeing that I was getting 30, 40, 50 sightings in areas where there were cities. So I put that aside and went back and tried to finish the third book, which was the Western United States. As I finished the Western United States, something else popped up that was evident for me. And that was cities where I had a whole lot more sightings within a city area than I did anywhere in the Central or Eastern United States, such as Phoenix, boy, they were loaded, and Seattle, and Portland, and San Francisco and Los Angeles. These cities were just massive with sightings, and I just found that so unusual. So what I did was I went back and started tinkering with my books to try to find out why this was occurring. Why were we having sightings in areas that I didn't expect? What I did then was look into the potential reasons of why that might be happening. And the one thing that bothered me is that the whole time I was looking at why based on the viewpoint of someone who lives here on Earth, not based on a viewpoint of somebody visiting from another planet. In other words, gee, they're after our resources, or maybe where are our minerals, or is there pollution here? Or, you know, I tried to look at absolutely everything across the entirety of the United States. Went back, finished volume 3, which was the Western U.S. Went back in and filled in what I didn't write about in volume 2, which was the central United States, and then went back into volume 1 and updated everything that I had included in volume 2 and 3. And this was a project, let me tell you. It took me, after I thought I had written my books and I was happy with them, I had to go back in and do probably another year's worth of work to go back in and backfill all the information that was missed. And it was a nightmare. It really was, Jim. It was a whole lot of work that I left on the table, but I'm so happy that I did it because I have volume 1, 2, and 3 that are comprehensive now. And I just found that really, really heartwarming for me. This huge project, I completed it, and I was just so happy. I just couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe myself. Couldn't believe I did it. There was a heck of a lot of work involved.
So you got,
going to say something, Jim?
Yeah, I was going to say, so you got the map going, and you got these books going. How many sleepless nights do we have in here?
Well, when bedtime hit at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, I fell right to sleep. My biggest problem was at 3 a.m., that's when I woke up.
Oh, okay. And my I was going to say, I knew there's a problem here somewhere.
Yeah. Well, my mind was going 100 miles an hour with all the things that I had to do for the next day. It was a nightmare. It really was tough.
So you get the third book done. So what happens next?
Okay. Well, when I first became a ufologist, that's right after I retired. I went into paranormal investigating and ufology. So what I wanted to do was write down my thoughts on what we would have to do as a race of people to get there. Not trying to think of what they did to get here. Okay? So I tried to list all of the problems in physics that we would have to solve and go back in and write about each of those particular problems. And when I did that, I had approximately 35 very long blogs. They were anywhere from 1 to 5 typewritten pages. So I took all of those blogs and tried to put them in some sort of logical order so that if you were going to solve a problem, you know, this is the first one you'd solve, and this is the second, and this is the third. And I tried to put all of the various blogs that I had written and put them in some sort of order. Then, of course, with each of these, I had to write how else would I describe it? Kind of like a joining thing between each one, so that it would flow between one and the other. So that was interesting work. It didn't take me as long as I thought it was going to take me, because I just basically had to write 35 joiners. All of the blogs were written, and it was pretty interesting. So this was my fourth book, and this book is entitled Going Interstellar. So if we're going interstellar, these are the problems we have to solve. So those are my first four books, and I said I wrote five of them. Well, I didn't know what else to write about, so I just put all that aside and stopped thinking about it. And I guess one of those mornings I woke up with an idea. Hey, I'm going to prove that UFOs are attracted to major earthquakes. People say they are all the time. You hear that all the time. But I never saw anybody prove it. So I thought, well, okay, it's my job. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to try to prove this. So I got the thing with the list of earthquakes from the Earthquake Center, and found where the big ones occurred from 2001 to approximately 2016, because that's what I had massaged the database right up until that point. And I made a list of where the earthquakes occurred, and of course I had all of the databases, and I joined them all into one great big database, which was a nightmare. So I had probably maybe 90,000 sightings in this database. It was pretty voluminous, let me tell you. But what I had to do is I had to sort of break it up into pieces, because the greatest majority of the quakes occurred on the East Coast, on the West Coast, out near California and off the coast of California, and of course up into Oregon and Washington. That was the majority of the quakes. So I thought, okay, I got to break up the database into three separate ones, so that if something were to occur in the West, then I could just do the West. And if something occurred in the central, then I just have a smaller database in the central United States to work with. And the same with the East Coast. So I created a small map of the United States and put a notation on each one of the maps where the major quakes were. And there was only about 20, I guess, major quakes. That's above 4.5 on the Richter scale. So 20 major quakes in the United States. And so I put them on a map. So I figured that all I had to do was look for a couple of days around that quake and make a notation in and around the quake where the UFO sightings were, and I'm going to have my proof. Didn't work out that way. The proof wasn't forthcoming. I was having UFO sightings around the place, of course, but no collection of UFO sightings around where the major quakes occurred. So I thought, well, okay, what else is going on in the United States? Maybe I should look at the whole United States to see if maybe there's other smaller quakes occurring elsewhere that they're collecting around. So I set up the database to do that. And then I had another idea. besides that, why don't I expand the time frame that I'm looking for the quakes, looking in around the time frame of the quake? In other words, maybe they are collecting around the quake up to 5 days before the quake occurs. So I included that information. I was going in four different directions and really had no idea what I was going to find. Well, when I put this on the maps that I had created, I settled on 5 days before, the day of, and 5 days after as one of my things to look at. And then I also looked at 2 days before, the day of, and 2 days after. And also, at the same time, put all of the UFO sightings within those time frames on the maps. Well, I saw nothing there that I could write about. There was absolutely nothing. I couldn't say, oh yeah, all the quakes are occurring here, and all those UFOs are just going around it, because that's not what I found. So I have all this data that I worked on for probably 10, 12 months, something like that, and had all these maps all over the place that I had stretched out, and I couldn't find anything to write about. I didn't know what to do. So I set the maps up on my kitchen table and put another table next to it and stretched all the maps out in like one great big continuous line left to right for 2 days before, 2 days after, and then above that, 5 days before and 5 days after, and just set them up on one great big line on multiple tables. I still couldn't see anything. I mean, I was standing right in front of the maps and couldn't tell anything that was going on. So it's just the one time my dog barked and wanted to go outside. So I stopped what I was doing and I went to the back room and opened up the door. She went out and did her thing, you know, waited for her and came back in and closed the door back again and went back out into the kitchen to look, and I stopped before I stood at the bottom of the map. You know, like when you look at the map of the U.S., you'd stand where Texas is and look upward, you know, where California is on your left and New York's on your right. But this time I stood basically down a whole row of these maps where California is, and I looked down the row of maps. I saw all of these straight lines that the UFO sightings were showing me on probably about 90% of the maps. What the heck is that from? Why are they straight line sightings? So I had to come up with a reason. So I went back through all of the information that I did on my first three books and looked at why possibly they could be in the particular areas that they are. Is it the minerals? Is it the water resources? Is it the pollution? Is it rivers and mountains? I looked at everything. And you know what occurred? This was one of the other times when I woke up at 3 a.m. and thought, you know what? If these guys were able to go across the entire cosmos and show up here, they have some super duper computers in their craft. So why would they have to keep going back and forth over the same areas? There's no reason. If they scanned across the entire country and they mapped the resources, well, they'd have all that information there, and all they had to do is go back through their, look up the data that they found. There would be no reason for them to keep going back and forth looking at the rivers. The rivers aren't changing. The minerals aren't changing. If pollution is changing, but only slightly and continuously going up, so they could almost predict what that's going to be. The Air Force bases, they aren't moving those. I mean, I couldn't come up with a reason of why there were straight line sightings across the country until about 2 weeks later at 3 o'clock in the morning. I woke up and, ha-ha, I know why. I bet that they are looking at the only thing that could possibly be changing in our country. This was same would go for every other country. And the only thing that's changing is the people. The people are awakening. The people are realizing that they are seeing and realizing things that they never saw and realized. They're seeing ghosts. They're seeing things in the sky. They are awakening. So was the country. So was the world. The world is awakening, but that's what's changing, and it's changing almost on a daily basis. So that's what they're looking at. So then I had this other problem. What does awakening mean? I knew what was happening because I was experiencing a lot of the same stuff myself, Jim. And I couldn't put my thumb on what was happening to me. So I got help from a whole lot of my Facebook friends, who many are paranormal investigators and psychics and empaths and just a whole range of people, and I got them to write about what is the meaning of awakening. What is the meaning of ascension? If we're ascending, what does that what happens within the people? And to write 1, 2, 3 pages about that. And that's what I included in this book to describe what the UFOs are most likely seeing and why they have to go back and forth over the same areas continuously, because that's what's changing. This really took me by surprise. I never expected to be in this realm. But let me tell you, it really set me back. I couldn't put my finger on anything, and boom, there it was right in front of me. It was really quite remarkable.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've noticed that people are paying more attention. I don't know if I'd call them awake, but that's a whole other conversation for another time. But at least they're paying attention and starting, I guess. It's not a light switch moment for most people. I mean, some of us, yeah, it is. Once we kind of come to grips to it and we just nosedive into it. Other people, it's kind of a drip. So now I've got to ask you this question because it came up in my chat room, and I'm just going to do it. I think I know the answer to this, and you can laugh at me because just go ahead. That's just what I'm going to say.
Go ahead.
Any thoughts of doing a map of Canada?
If I were to come up with the database for Canada, then perhaps I would do it. See, the database for the United States was in the National UFO Reporting Center and it was right there. And for the United States at the time I started, there were about 80,000 sightings. And it was tough to edit out the ones that weren't really valid sightings and deal with all the rest. I don't know if a database exists in Canada. So that would be my first problem. And the second problem would, of course, be to get a large map of Canada and sit there and put pins in it. That would be a whole lot harder for me because I'm not that familiar with the geography.
Well, there's your problems, Canada. Fix it. No. Oh boy, if it was only those, if those were the only Canada's problems, right? We could, well. So while we're fixing problems that don't exist or do exist, I'm interested on your take of the Space Force, because I know we didn't talk about this the last time you're on, because it's a newish creation. I know that everybody says it isn't about extraterrestrials, it's about space junk, but you know, on some level, of course, you just told me about 80,000 sightings. So on some level, it has to be something about that.
Wow. Okay. The U.S. Space Force. I honestly don't know what they're doing with the U.S. Space Force. I've tried to read everything I possibly can, and I'm probably no further along than anyone else is. Because I've been concentrating on these particular sightings and what they may be revealing to me. But looking at some of the obvious things, might they be worried about cleaning up the low Earth orbit so that they can send things up there without worrying about something crashing into them? Sure. That's got to be on the radar because it's a mess up there. But with all these UFO sightings, there's probably a good measure of them that can be explained away, but they all can't be. So going up there, they have to be aware that they are looking out for the future of the Earth, and I would not be surprised at all if they're working with other civilizations up there. I wouldn't be surprised a bit.
Which leads me to asked you if there's anything you want to talk about, and disclosure came up, and of course I'm always about that because I don't know. I had Jim Morris on the show years ago, and he said, "Even if the government came out and slapped down everything they had, would you believe that? Would you believe them?" And of course, it's the government.
Good point. Yeah.
Would you believe them? So, do you think they're ever gonna come out and slap everything down they have in front of us?
Yeah, I think we've seen just about all we're going to see. I don't think they're going to come forth with the wreckage or anything else, not for a long time to come. But they are releasing little bits of information about things that some of the pilots are seeing, like the military pilots, and that's going to continue happening in little dribs and drabs. I don't believe we'll ever get a huge revelation out of the government. For the exact reason that Jim said, nobody's going to believe him anyhow. However, if they were to come out with something, I don't know how well received it would be. I don't think it would be panic. But I'm just not sure that it would be received very well. Let's go back about 6 years or so. Richard Dolan wrote a book, AD After Disclosure, That was the name of the book, AD After Disclosure. This was an absolutely awesome book. And what he did was he described something that would be akin to them landing on the White House lawn and how everybody in our country would react to it. And he did a wonderful job in going right to the minutia of how this person may react, or this area of the country may react. It was just wonderful what he did. But as this book progressed, people started realizing that the government most likely knew what was going on for a longer period of time than they described. That some of the new things that were being released in the technological field could have been used many years previous to make our lives better. If we had access to seriously advanced medical skills and were able to cure cancer, how many people's family members would be alive? That would create some real problems. And this book did a wonderful, wonderful job of all of the various scenarios. And he ended up describing what would happen years after the original revelation, as that the country may actually fail because have lost all trust. This book was wonderful. I really highly recommend that everybody reads it. AD After Disclosure. It was written by Richard Dolan. It was marvelous, just marvelous. And he and his co-author, can't recall his name now, Bryce Zabel, maybe. But anyhow, it was just awesome, man. I highly recommend it for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds interesting. I mean, to think about that. But okay, so I want to shift gears with you because it's almost Halloween. For just a minute, because it fascinates mm-hmm. me that, I mean, you said that you retired and you got into paranormal investigating and ufology. And you've did all this writing with the UFOs and all this other stuff. Wasn't the paranormal, the ghost hunting, that interesting for you?
Well, it was, but I came across quite a few teammates who just never really took it seriously. And I was severely disillusioned. And also, I started meeting other team members of other teams around the country, and found that they didn't approach investigation very seriously. They jumped to conclusions, and I just got sick of it. Really, I just got sick of it. Even though I would love to go back out ghost hunting, but I just took things far too seriously and tried to do things 100% the right way. And by the right way, I mean looking at investigation styles and taking down evidence and debunking everything. There's a lot of groups that do that, but very rarely do they stick with it.
Yeah, I was going to say, there only seems to be There's two types of people in ghost hunting. There's the people like you're describing that want to take it seriously, and then there's the exact opposite. There doesn't seem to be much gray area, especially with ghost hunting. Now, ufology and cryptids, it kind of seems to kind of get more gray. Maybe that's where that fills in. I'm not sure, but that'd be an interesting thing. I'm inspired by your map at this moment. I'm like, maybe I should make this kind of diagram. No. Because it seems there's definitely more gray area when it comes to ufology. Like, people believe, and then there's this whole... there's layers to it. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. The people that are wearing tinfoil hats, and the people that believe, and then there's the people that kind of believe.
Yeah, and everybody is an expert. Just ask them.
Well, Tom, that's why I'm asking you. You're here.
Yeah, well, you know, whether they're an expert or not, they're all experts. And that really bothers me. A little bit of humility would go a long way, you know? Perhaps draw your conclusions and leave the door open for discussion, and don't close the door on other discussions with people. If we did that, we would be way ahead of the game. But we never seem to want to do that, and everybody wants to flex their muscles and describe themselves as the resident expert, and that's just not helpful.
You know, you said resident expert, and you know the phrase that came to mind is, the village called and they went their idiot back.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple of those.
Oh, Tom, I'm glad I said that, not you.
Yeah.
And the hate mail starts to pile in now. And I'm not talking about you specifically. Don't take it personally. God. You know there's some guy out there right now who feels personally attacked by that.
Absolutely.
So, I'm back to my big chart thing here. Where do cryptids enter in your picture? Have you had an interest in Bigfoot or any of those other things?
When I first started in with UFOs, I was in with a group of people who also did Bigfoot research. Very interesting people. There were two of them specifically. They had opposite opinions, but I listened to everything. And I was of the opinion at the time that, you know, I'm not so convinced that Bigfoot exists. And then I, you know, started hearing stories, started doing research, started reading about it and what people were seeing and describing. And I've come to the conclusion now that I don't think that Bigfoot is a primate. In other words, an ape. I don't believe that. But I also think that Bigfoot is potentially interdimensional.
Now, you're not the first person to say that to me, but it stops me every time I hear it. Because it makes sense to a level. And, of course, then that kind of opens the UFO thing back up, too.
Like
some people do, and the ghost thing. Like, it all kind of puts it... Well, it keeps it in the same box, obviously, because they're all connected there. It changes where the box is at. Bad pun. And I put some credence in that because I think there's something, if it's another dimension, as we're talking about, it kind of makes sense. Of course, I'm not making any sense right now, so that doesn't help.
I don't think that they are from another planet, that the UFOs brought them here and released them onto the planet in various places and whatever. I don't believe that. But I would not be surprised if they have been in and out of our reality for tens of thousands of years that they've been around. And interdimensional is the only thing that really makes sense to me, because if they are able to go between dimensions, it explains why they disappear, and many of them. It also explains why there's no carcass. So I would not be surprised if they are interdimensional and have been with us all this time.
Yeah, I'm looking back at your map and I'm seeing those straight lines and I'm thinking, is there something there between the dimensions and where they line up? And
could be.
Deep thoughts aren't good. Good audio though. So are you out? I mean, you've done all the pinning and all the stuff. Are you out actively looking for UFOs at night, or?
Until recently, I was. I've had a couple of medical problems, and I have a tendency to just want to sit in my chair at night. But believe me, it's not that I'm not thinking about them and dreaming about them and a whole bunch of other stuff. But I'm not out at night looking for them because it's just too hard on me.
So maybe you can answer this question. Are sightings up over the last 18 months?
I think that they are. It's sort of cyclic, and as the sightings will go up for a particular year, then they may be down for 2 years, and it cycles back up again. So it's almost sinusoidal, the amount of sightings that are being seen, but it's high right now. There's a lot going on in the skies.
Oh God, this is just random. I don't even know if I want to go here. Oh, I'm doing it. I want you to figure out if it has anything to do with who's in the White House. If there's more sightings when a Republican's in the office or a Democrat.
I would seriously doubt that. I don't think... I don't... I've never come across anything like that. I know that the amount of sightings right around 2000 started to increase slightly, and they increased in an upward trend all the way to about 2011. And in 2011 through 2014, there was a big spike. And then 15, 16, it was slightly depressed, and it's on an upswing again. So I don't think that you can say that one particular president is responsible for more sightings. I think what's responsible for more sightings is people smoking cigarettes.
But isn't that declining, though?
Yeah, it is. It is. But people are smoking cigarettes, and that's when they go out and see things in the sky. Not only that, they are also walking at night. They're exercising. They're doing outdoor things. That is responsible for UFO sightings, because after all, unless you're outside, you're not going to see them.
Well, you have to be outside, and you have to be paying attention to the environment you're in, which also seems to be on the decline.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me wonder how many actual sightings there could be. if people were actually paying attention.
There was an experiment done with one of my friends who was sampling people who have reported UFO sightings, and the best guess previous to her experiment was one out of every 100 sightings is being reported. So 99 things people are seeing in the sky and they never report it. But she looked at the amount of sightings and the amount of people who are outside and looking up, and she found the number closer to a 700 or 800, one out of 800. So there would be a whole lot more things being reported than are being reported if people were to do the due diligence, let me tell you.
I was okay with the math with one in 100 because I could just move the zeros and kind of make that work.
Yeah.
This 800 thing kind of, well, I'm not going to break out the calculator, but wow. And then I'm sitting here wondering about the paranormal, the ghost things. How many of those are being quote unquote reported versus not? Do people just roll off as something else? And that's probably going to be in that one in 800 range too.
I think it used to be, but because of the ghost shows, I think that number has dropped down.
You think? I think there's still probably some people that aren't talking about, though.
Well, there's some that would never talk about it, and it wouldn't be a good thing for them to say because of the work they're in or because of their friends or whatever the deal happens to be. But I think it's more common that people will talk about a ghost than they would a UFO.
You think that'll change at some point?
Yes. Yep. And I think that because the government started mentioning UFOs and started mentioning the military seeing them and various things like that, I think that'll take some of the stigma away.
My favorite point of reference is the Pope agreeing that he had baptized aliens.
That was interesting. Yeah.
I have no idea. Like, that just sticks with me. Like, I don't know. I that might be as close as disclosure as we ever get, and that's probably close enough for me.
Mm-hmm. Like,
for him to come out and say that was kind of like... And then I'm sitting here going, where does that come from? Like, can you imagine being, you know, just randomly one day and the guy's Pope's like, hey, you know what I want to do? I'm going to go out and talk about aliens today.
There had to have been a conscious decision to do that.
Yeah, like, I can't imagine being in that room. Like that?
Yeah. There was, I'm trying to think of his name now. There was a priest who is the Vatican astronomer, Father Anselmo or something like that. But anyhow, he talked about aliens and said that they definitely exist and things along those lines very shortly after the Pope said what he said.
Yeah, which, I mean, after the Pope said it, I mean, it kind of just became, yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, like I said, it just kind of is like, of all the places, I would have lost a lot of money hearing that news.
Yeah, that was interesting. But the Vatican knows everything there is to know about extraterrestrial intelligence.
Do you think they'll ever tell us anymore?
In little dribs and drabs, they will.
I see. I'm interested to know what they know. That'd be fun.
I don't think we're ever going to get the big D, okay? I don't think it's ever going to happen. But the little D, in terms of mentioning a particular sighting here or there or something, somebody saw something, we'll definitely get a constant trickle of that stuff.
So I kind of glossed over this when you said that you got into this after you retired. What made you interested in this whole ball of wax to start with?
Well, I've always been interested in UFOs. Always. My aunt was the secretary for the Astronomical League of America when I was a teenager. And I would go with her to conferences on astronomy and a whole bunch of other stuff. I was always been interested in that subject. And when I was a teenager, I mean, we're talking 1950s, there wasn't a whole lot of information put out about it. But there were a couple of books written, and I read all of those books. There were very interesting things about varying sightings that people saw, that the government saw, that doctors saw. There's just a whole series of books about this. Trying to think. I drew a blank on who it was. Oh, darn it. Anyhow, he wrote about four or five books at the time. Oh, Major Donald Kehoe. And these books really got me interested in UFOs, but I had no outlet for it. 1950s, there was nothing. And then, of course, life got in the way. I got married and had a couple of kids and worked the whole time. And the only time I had an opportunity to do anything was when I had nothing to do. And when I had nothing to do, that's when I retired.
You need to become one of those people that retire and get busier? Well, it sounds like you did.
Oh, it's awful.
That's the, you know, people, you know, I hear people saying, I'm going to retire and do this, that, and the other, and then I see them 6 months later, and they're busy with this, that, and the other, but it's not the first things they thought they were going to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never thought I was going to write a book. I never started out to write a book. I only started out doing research in the databases so that I would have something to talk about when I was doing lectures. I love talking to people. And matter of fact, I have something coming up in November. And I absolutely love doing that. And when I realized how much I had put together with just one state that I was looking into, just one state, then I realized I should continue down the East Coast and do more of it. And that's what got me going on my first book.
And there it goes, down
yep,
the road.
And boom.
Literally down the road. That wasn't even intentional, but there it was. Go ahead and tell the listeners about what you're doing in November and where people can find you and all that other fun stuff if they have any questions for you or want to get the books or, you know what I'm saying, Tom. You've done this before.
Okay, sure. Now, I'm talking to a paranormal group about UFOs, and it's down in Middletown, New York, which is up north of, I guess you could go to Scranton and go about 75 miles north. It's over the New York border, and that's where Middletown is. And my books are available through Amazon. You can search through asserts through my writing name, which is Thomas W. Conwell, C-O-N-W-E-L-L. And my book names, they are here, Volume 1, Volume 2, and Volume 3, Going Interstellar, and Earthquakes and UFOs. Their link is not what you think. And those are my books, and that's how you can get them. And you can contact me via Facebook. That's the best way. My Facebook address is tom.conwell.3. That's my Facebook address. And my email address is tconwell2@nycap.rr.com. There's a lot of ways you can get in touch with me, and I'm available to chat with anybody. I love doing talks, and if you have a conference or anything else, I love to talk at conferences as long as I can set up a booth and sell my books.
Well, that seems fair, in my opinion. But what do I know? I'm just a guy that talks. What are you working on today? Are you working on another book? Or I hate asking that question, but you know.
Well, I was working on another book, and I still get awakened at 3 a.m. Thinking of things, and one of the things that occurred to me about the next book that I was going to write is that, I don't know if it was a spirit guide or somebody else was trying to influence me, but they talked me out of writing the next one. The next book I was going to write was about global warming and what the ETs are looking for from us in the way of a clean planet. I did all the research and then just dropped it.
Hmm. Interesting.
And I'm waiting for the next assignment, so to speak, because that's where I get all my ideas in the morning. I wake up and I know what I'm going to do that day.
Well, Tom, I appreciate you coming back on. I'm sorry it's taken so long, but you know, get busy. I know you know how that goes.
Oh yeah.
So thanks again.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, Jim. It's been a long time since we chatted, and it was good to touch base with you.
Thank you, Tom. Have a good evening.
Yep, you too, Jim.
And there's Tom Conwell there. Can't thank him enough for all the UFO knowledge tonight. 6 years since he's been on, so go dig that one up if you're interested in hearing how Tom's changed through the years. So I listened a little bit this afternoon just to kind of get my pacing and all that stuff back. So yeah, next week we've got something else special. I'm not going to get into it yet. And then the first Tuesday in November, everybody knows it's the annual, the 9th, 8th prediction show. Be ready. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Mountain Report. Stay tuned for details on saving money at the Duck Pond Shop. I hope you enjoyed this report. Please subscribe so that you can join us again. And if you appreciate the show, leave us some stars or a review. For more notes from this show or other great shows, check out Mallard.com. A reminder, the views and opinions of this show are those of the host and guest and do not represent any sponsors, affiliates, or any other partners of the Mallard Report. Now for your money-saving tip. Promo code Mallard at checkout of DuckPondShop.com, where you can get your t-shirt, coffee mug, and other great products. That's promo code Mallard at checkout, DuckPondShop.com. Until next week, stay safe and keep quacking.
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on.